If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. You're with George Christensen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
G'day, I'm George Christensen here on The George Christensen Show. For the next hour, we're joined by an author, a researcher, and a natural health advocate by the name of James Roguski. James, joining us all the way from the USA, where it is just after midnight. How are you, James?
Oh, I'm great. I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to try to straighten out what I think is a lot of either confusion or just complete and total lack of awareness of what the WHO is up to.
Yeah. Well, look, I know that the work you do is taking difficult, highly complex issues and translating that into simple language that's easy to understand and helps facilitate action. And I know that the World Health Organization is well and truly within your sights. Their proposed pandemic treaty, their proposed changes to the international health regulations. Let's start from the very beginning, though, James. I mean, what tell us in your, you know, from all the research that you've done, what is it about the pandemic treaty, which is one thing, and what is it about the proposed changes to the international health regulations that should have so many of us who are concerned about freedom, about medical freedom, about national sovereignty, what is it that should have so many of us concerned?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, you know, even though they've put out a 32-page zero draft of the proposed pandemic treaty and 197 pages of proposed amendments from 94 member nations around the world and a 97-page International Health Regulations Review Committee final report, it's really what's not in these documents that is actually the most disturbing. And what's not in these documents is really any discussion of what the heck went wrong over the last 3 years. There's really no discussion of anything health related. And this is, you know, the start of the confusion. The international health regulations are a body of international law that's legally binding. We've been a party to it, you know, all 194 member nations for decades now. And quite frankly, they're improperly named. They really focus on surveillance and monitoring and reporting and emergency declarations and control. And so by calling them the international health regulations, it confuses the daylights out of people. If we called them the international surveillance regulations, everybody would be like, hey, what, you know, what's going on there? Doctors are not being consulted. They're not talking about whether or not the tests that really weren't tests that were used were appropriate. They're not talking about whether or not the jabs, you know, did good or harm. They're not talking about, you know, the lack of effectiveness of masks or lockdowns or even curfews or any of that sort of thing. None of that is being discussed in the secret meetings that they're having. They're only talking about compliance and surveillance and monitoring and gain of function research and a lot about money. And so they have been having meetings for the last year plus, and lately more and more of those meetings have been held in secret because they've recently just shifted from where the nations were asked to give proposals to now they're in negotiations, and they've been doing all of that behind closed doors with no public comment at all.
Yeah, well, that's very disturbing straight up. But what actually, let's start on the international health regulations. What causes or what changes that have been proposed in the IHRs that will impact upon people's freedoms, the everyday person in Australia, and how will that be so?
Well, the most blatant and direct aspect of it, there are, you have to realize there are 307 proposed amendments. And yes. quite a number of them, primarily coming from the European Union, the African nations, and Russia, Indonesia, and India, have to do with the institution of a digital global health certificate system. Now that wouldn't just be a vaccine certificate. They also have suggested test certificates, prophylaxis certificates, recovery certificates, a passenger locator form, and a traveler's health declaration. All of that tied to a personal QR code with a paper backup, you know, for nations that maybe don't have the high-tech infrastructure. So essentially, they could track and trace and control the movements of everybody on the planet.
And very so scary.
In Europe, you know, this is very close to being implemented. You know, many nations have digital IDs. You know, I've heard rumblings in Canada and Australia where it's, you know, right on the verge of being implemented. And so the nations are moving forward, you know, with this independently. And this would set it up as a global network where your private health information would be accessed through an interoperable database system. And, you know, it's a step away from the Chinese social credit system. If nations were allowed to change, you know, their requirements, people would not be free to move about the planet. And so as an answer to your specific question of, you know, how would this most likely impact, you know, people directly, you know, we're talking, in my view, digital enslavement. And so for information about that, I have an article entitled RejectDigitalEnslavement.com. If you're pro digital enslavement, well, you might not want to visit that page. But you know, that is the most direct. Now, of the 307, I wrote an article a couple of months ago about the, you know, 50 worst, and I boiled it down to the top 10. So let me just give you a couple more.
Yep.
India proposed an amendment to Article 3, which a year or so ago, when I first became aware of what was going on with this, I read the international health regulations. And when I got to Article 3, I thought, well, you know, this doesn't sound so bad, because Article 3 currently says the core principle behind the international health regulations is that they would be implemented with full respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of people. Well, India proposed crossing out the words full respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of people. And so you look at that and you really don't need to know much more. That is, you know, that is the soundbite either from hell or from heaven, depending upon how you want to look at it. When I first read that, I noticed my jaw hanging open, because I really was astonished that they actually put that in writing.
Was there any justification that India gave for wanting to remove human rights as something that was thought through before implementing any sort of international health regulatory approach?
Well, you know, they didn't really explain that. They wanted to replace it with equity and inclusivity and, you know...
of course, all the buzzwords.
Common but differentiated responsibilities, okay? And so, but it actually plays into the other proposed amendments, because Bangladesh... Now, you have to... I'll go back even a little further. In Article 23 of the WHO Constitution, which was agreed to way back in the 1940s, the WHO has all of the authority in the world to make non-binding recommendations. And so, you know, I'm sure you've made recommendations to people. People tell you what you should do. But, you know, they're non-binding. You know, you can follow their advice or you can ignore it if you wish.
Yep.
Bangladesh proposed changing the definition of temporary or standing recommendations to remove the phrase non-binding. And then Malaysia submitted a proposed amendment that would make recommendations. It says that they shall be implemented as soon as possible. And so the combination of that, even the International Health Regulations Review Committee, which was 20 handpicked people picked by Tedros that met in secret October, November, December, and January, they published a 97-page final report of their technical recommendations about all of these amendments. And even they said that that would totally change the character of the WHO from an advisory organization to one that was essentially a dictatorial regime.
Yeah.
And so a couple of more things that they want to do. They have proposed giving the director general the authority to declare what they call a public health emergency of international concern, PHEIC, or FAKE, if there's even the potential, if there's even the potential that there would be an emergency, which pretty much leaves it open to the whim of you know, whoever holds that office to say that there is an emergency, much like they did with what I call moneypox.
Yes.
You know, the emergency committee actually voted 9-6 that it was not and it should not be called a fake, but they called it a fake anyways. And, you know, we're still under an emergency in the United States.
Whoever was on the job of acronyms got it wrong that day, didn't they? Or well, right, you know, as the case may be.
I've co-opted it, and I'll mention how and why, because the African nations also submitted a new proposed amendment that would create a new Article 44A, which is for massive financing. And so, you know, there have been talk of up to $30 billion per year, where the WHO's entire budget is currently under $4 billion. And so they proposed that, and they said, well, we'll give you the details 24 months after it's been adopted. And so I've co-opted their acronym. I don't use theirs. I call it the Pharmaceutical Hospital Emergency Industrial Complex. And essentially what they want to do is, you know, this actually isn't about health. The Indonesian health minister back at the B20 in November, he pointed out that they have created, not the WHO, actually the United States is the lead behind this, but there are many other nations involved, along with the World Bank. They created what's now known as the Pandemic Fund. And they've gotten pledges of a couple of billion dollars. They wanted to go up to $10 billion a year. And the idea that he was presenting to the group at the B20 was that, look, we've got billions of dollars. Go invest in the companies that this money is going to be flowing to. It's a great business opportunity. And so, you know, these are not discussions about your health. These are discussions about how to set up crony capitalism to build out the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex with no concern as to whether or not people are made healthier. It's about certain people being made wealthier.
Yeah, and
so
indeed.
They hide it in all kinds of wonderful language, and they confuse the daylights out of people because they have these two separate things. The treaty is one thing, and I am very much more concerned personally about the proposed amendments to the international health regulations. And the next thing I want to spend a few moments with to explain, I think it will absolutely really hurt the minds of the people that are listening, because—
Well, can we do that after the break, James? We just have to go to a quick break.
And, I think we should give people a rest and get them prepared for what's coming.
But this is explosive stuff. This is James Roguski. He's an independent researcher. He's been researching the World Health Organization and its machinations, particularly around the pandemic treaty. And what we're discussing at the moment is separate to that, the international health regulations, here on the George Christensen Show on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Steve Hook.
It looks like Comer and the House Oversight Committee has got the goods on the Biden family. The question now becomes, how long will it be before the media actually acknowledges what Comer and the committee has found? But a lot of folks are probably not going to find out about this for a while. My suspicion is the media will do what the media does, and they will bury a lot of this info. But I would sure love to know why the CCP is wiring millions and millions and millions of dollars to Joe Biden and Biden family members, his brothers, his son, and one member that has yet to been, Comer, he said, we're not going to tell you who that is just yet. I don't know if Vegas is taking odds on this, but I'd be willing to bet that Dr. Jill Biden is up there in the voting. And if it comes down that Jill Biden is getting paid from the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, boy, wouldn't that be something.
Steve Hook on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you. Involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Government has taken our rights and will never give them back unless we make them. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show. You're here with George Christensen, and I'm joined by independent researcher and activist James Roguski, who's been talking to us about the World Health Organization and its machinations, particularly in relation to the independent health regulations. James was taking us through some of the most concerning elements of the IHR changes. I mean, the most concerning one by far, obviously, is the introduction of some global digital health certificate. Also, the proposed removal of our human rights from the regulatory approach overall. And you're going to take us through a few more of them, James.
I'm going to back up just a tiny little bit. You know, I'm in the United States, and the United States did propose a number of amendments to various articles, but 100 nations around the world did not propose any amendments. Back in May of last year, one of the things that was agreed upon was, you know, all nations who felt that the international health regulations should be amended were encouraged to submit any proposed amendments by September 30th of last year. And 94 nations did, but 100 nations did not, including Australia. And so, right, you know, the nations like Australia, the United Kingdom, Canada, and Mexico, and so forth, you know, these nations did not submit any amendments at all. And one would have to look at that and go, well, I guess that means that they thought that the international health regulations were just fine the way they were. And so, yes, they should be looking at the other 94 nations and the 307 proposed amendments and comparing that to their position of, well, you know, leave it alone versus change 307 things. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, but here's where, the media has been absolutely silent. The politicians have been absolutely silent. The alternative media has been absolutely silent. Last year, this is the second time around for me. Last year, I reported that the Biden administration was attempting to propose, you know, amendments and slide them through very quietly. Those were completely kicked to the curb. They were not even really considered at the assembly last May. But in the middle of the assembly, unbeknownst to practically everybody, a different set of amendments were presented and they were adopted.
I would
venture to guess that most people listening have no idea that last May, international law was changed. And here's where the cognitive dissonance and the difficulty of accepting this. I can't tell you how many people have said to me, oh, that can't be right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when people talk about the treaty, and realize everything we've been talking about has not been about the treaty. It's all been about the amendments to the regulations, which are an existing body of law. When people hear treaty, they go, oh, you know, Parliament or the Senate would have to, you know, debate and
ratify it,
or a president would have to sign it. That is not what I'm talking about. The amendments to the regulations, since we've been party to the regulations for decades, in the regulations themselves, it defines the method by which they can be amended. And it's a procedure that most people just can't accept. 194 delegates who are unelected, unaccountable, and quite frankly, unknown. You know, you can ask your viewing audience, do you know who your delegate is to the WHO? Most people have no idea, right? They get together in Geneva once a year. They decide what these amendments might be. And if a simple majority of them agree, that's it. That's all that needs to be done. There's no presidential signature. There's no discussion in Parliament or Congress or anything like that. The way it works is the opposite of what everybody thinks. There is currently an 18-month period where each nation could have their president or foreign minister just write a letter to the WHO, send a notice, and say, well, you know, thank you very much for those amendments, but no thank you, we reject them. Under Article 61 of the International Health Regulations, any and all nations can, could, and should reject the amendments that were adopted last May, but the vast majority of people have no idea that the regulations were amended. They have no idea that their nation, you know, could reject those amendments. And, you know, their political leaders are doing everything they can to just ignore the situation because silence equals consent. It's not that a nation has to proactively approve them. They have to proactively reject them if they wish. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they just go into action or enforcement this coming November. So it's been a big secret for 10 years. I mean, 10 months.
So, James, look, I'm someone who understands a fair bit about what you're talking about here. I mean, I understand, you know, the international health regulations are very different to the proposed pandemic treaty, which, you know, hasn't gotten legs as yet, although it might in the not-too-distant future, a few years from now. The international health regulations are something that a bunch of nations, including mine and yours, are already subject to. And what the proposal is through the World Health Assembly, which is that unelected group of faceless people that you talked about before, they were deliberating on changes to those international health regulations. And those changes, as you've alluded to, if left without rejection by any host country or by any member country, they will essentially become the regulations that every country is bound to that's currently signed up to the international health regulations. My understanding, though, and this is where I may have failed to do my homework, my understanding, though, was the things that you were concerned about and that many of us were concerned about, such as a global health passport or a global health digital identity, such as, you know, giving the Director General of the WHO the ability to declare a pandemic or fake, as you called it before, to, for instance, what else was there? Just expanding the remit of the World Health Organization so they would so their recommendations are no longer non-binding. That all of that was essentially dropped in the changes that were made. Have I got that wrong? And have other people who have been informing me about this got it wrong?
That unfortunately, I believe, came as a gross misinformation from Senator Malcolm Roberts. 6 to 7 or so weeks ago, he came out with a video that went very viral, and he misinterpreted a document, and I'll try to explain it. If we're not talking about the treaty at all, right? Forget about the treaty. Just put it off to the side.
Can I just jump in there and just say quickly before you do, Senator Roberts is actually a known friend of mine, and he's not someone who I would think would deliberately go out there. In fact, I'll drop the word. He is not someone who would deliberately go out there and spread something that's false. So we need to clear this up as to exactly what has happened.
Well, I have tried to reach out to his office. I did so immediately within hours of the video being made live. I don't ascribe intent to anybody. I just go with the facts. And so let me try to explain what the situation and the documents and the facts are. Okay?
Yes.
All the way back in September, all of these proposed amendments were submitted to the WHO. The amendments themselves were kept secret until mid-December. I reported on them in mid-December. But that entire time, October, November, December, and January, Tedros Ghebreyesus, the director general, put together, as is his right under the IHRs, he picked 20 experts, not representatives of any country, but experts to advise him. And what they did is they put together a 97-page document that gave technical recommendations about the amendments. Okay? Now, you have to realize the amendments, 197-page document, came from all of the individual nations. Tedros put together the International Health Regulations Review Committee, who published a 97-page document with technical recommendations. Totally two separate things. The review committee was somewhat critical of many of the proposed amendments from the nations. The review committee said things like, well, if you change recommendations to that are non-binding and make them binding, okay, that would change the whole nature of the WHO. Now, what ultimately happened is on February 20th to the 24th, the review committee had presented this document to Tedros. He presented it to the working group for the International Health Regulations, and they had their meetings at the end of February. They gave a PowerPoint presentation. You can watch it on their recorded videos. And the nations pretty much just seem to have ignored it. All right? Now, you have to realize the WHO has a stake in this game, and their review committee gave Tedros technical recommendations about the nation's proposed amendments. That did not stop this in any way, shape, or form. But unfortunately, a video went viral that made it seem like, oh, don't worry about the amendments. But that was based on just advice given to Tedros. The nations of the world want what they want. They are negotiating for the various things that they want. They have no obligation whatsoever to obey a technical report that was given by scientific, advisors to Tedros. And it certainly seems like they really don't care.
Okay, so what has happened here is that this review committee, which has criticised a whole heap of the proposed changes, that's come public. But my question to you is, have the international health regulations that have all of these offensive things in it, such as making the WHO's non-binding mandate suddenly binding, the Global Health Digital Certificate, have those international health regulation changes been passed yet, or are we still able to head this off at the pass somehow?
Oh, we're definitely still able to head this off at the pass. Any statement that they were done and not to be worried about was clearly false. But here is what the WHO has been saying for, you know, as long as they've been doing this. They're shooting for May of 2024 for both the amendments and the treaty. Now, the concern is the method by which amendments can be adopted is very slippery. All they have to do is hold up a document in the middle of the meeting, and I've reported on this. People can go to my Substack and watch what happened last year. They use what's called a silence procedure. And so they all reach agreement in backroom deals and, you know, private informal meetings. And then when they get into the assembly hall, they hold up the document and they go, okay, we're, you know, discussing this. Are there any objections? Okay, nobody objected. Boom, it's adopted. I mean, that's literally what they did last year. No presidential signatures needed. No, you know, anything else is needed. And so,
James, do they do that en masse with an entire raft of proposed changes, or would they do it one by one?
They have said that they want it to be just one. You know, their phrase is nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. And so what they're negotiating now is to get – they love to achieve consensus where nobody disagrees. Okay. And so what they want to do is come into the yearly assembly meeting, having already worked out they literally said this the other day, you know, work out all the wrinkles, okay, reach a secret agreement amongst themselves, and then quietly adopt it, not by debating it or voting on it, just by nobody disagreeing. And so the problem really is that people are mistaking and confusing the amendments and the treaty. People are talking about the treaty, which would at least require a signature of a president or a prime minister, but the amendments need no signature and no parliamentary approval. And so the real issue at hand, okay, is that these are all being done in secret. They are having another set of meetings for the proposed amendments, April 17th to the 20th, and the media is completely silent. There's no public comment. A lot of people have unfortunately mistakenly been led to believe that, oh, the amendments, we're all done with them, you don't need to worry about them, which is absolutely not the case. And so their methodology is one that silence equals consent. And so if people are not talking about it, if they're not aware of it, if they're not paying attention to it, and more disastrously, if they're taking the details of the amendments and attributing it to the treaty, then the fact checkers have a field day. They go, oh,
that's right. That's right.
Now, see, I will talk a little bit about the treaty because the problem we'll do that after another break.
After another break, you've got it. And we'll talk all about the pandemic treaty itself, along with what you can do, dear listener, to stop all of this from becoming a reality here on the George Christensen Show on TNT Radio.
The World Health Organization is pushing its pandemic treaty, global instant lockdowns. This must be stopped.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The World Health Organization is once again pushing what the Washington Post called the Radical Pandemic Health Treaty. This must be stopped. The entire public health bureaucracy has now reinvented itself as a Marxist socialist pushing entity that must be brought under wraps. A pandemic treaty would give Bill Gates-funded scientists at the World Health Organization the ability to declare a pandemic and then see global lockdowns, global stay-at-home orders, global mask mandates, global vaccine passports. Bring back scientific debate, national sovereignty, and end the tyranny of the World Health Organization. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
There's something about living here. The skies that change right before your eyes. And people that look out for each other. A community that does its bit to plan and prepare to keep everyone safe. Because bushfire is just a part of life here. We've been through it before, and we'll get through it again. We live with bushfire, so we live bushfire ready.
If you're talking about it,
we have to stop being naive about the threat we face from China.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show. I'm George Christensen, joined by researcher James Roguski. We're going through the pandemic treaty at the World Health Organization. Beforehand, we were talking about something that's very different, and listeners need to be acutely aware of it, the international health regulations. But we were going to talk about the pandemic treaty. I guess we got Mark Morano there during the break that summed it up. I don't know if you got to hear what Mark Morano said in that little segment during the break there. James, was he right?
Mm-hmm. I only heard part of it, so I can't say exactly.
Okay.
But the treaty, in my opinion, is very, very bad. There are aspects of it that are, you know, very much people need to pay attention to, but it's also functioning as a decoy in many ways, and not the least of which is the first 12 pages of the 32-page document are probably some of the most sickeningly sweet propaganda you'll ever read. After the table of contents on page 3, the very first thing that it talks about is how important national sovereignty is. Now, I agree with that, okay? And so the trick is that they're getting everybody to pay attention to the treaty. If the average person does, you know, actually open up and look at the treaty, they get past the table of contents, the first thing they're greeted with are, you know, sovereignty and freedom and health and rights and, you know, equity and inclusivity, and 12 pages, well, 3 pages of table of contents, and then 9 pages of just pure propaganda. You got to keep reading to get to the second and third, you know, part of the document. And there are some horrible things in there. Number one, they want to speed up the regulatory approval of drugs. Well, they're not doing any of the safety testing now, and they want it to go faster. They want to put the WHO, now these are things that are in the treaty, they want to create a global pandemic supply chain and logistics network and put the WHO in charge of that. And they also want to have a pathogen access and benefits sharing system. They call it PABS. Mm-hmm. Now, what that means is if there are any samples taken, you know, think somebody sticking something up your nose or any other kind of samples and the genomic sequences that might be attributed to anything in there are all to go to the WHO. And the WHO wants to receive real-time access to 20% of the production of pandemic-related products. I mean, we're talking, you know, right out of the Marxist playbook, direct control over the means of production. Now, their argument is that, well, they have to have equity because the impoverished nations didn't get as many jabs as the wealthier nations who bought up the supply and had
lucky
the money
them.
To do so. Okay. Well, if you actually go to the WHO's website on their data pages about COVID, now I don't trust any data these days. It's all, been corrupted, but this is their data. If you look at the Americas, North and South America, 16 times as many people had their deaths attributed to COVID over the last 3 years when compared to Africa. It's almost 30 times as many people in Europe had their deaths attributed to COVID as in Africa. You would think, a reasonable person would say, well, let's go send a whole bunch of people to Africa and ask them what they did and what they didn't do and learn from them. But the opposite is what is being argued for, because the opposite would bring all kinds of money and investment and really, quote unquote, equity in, at least in the United States, the word equity means, you own your home and you've paid down some of the mortgage, so you have equity, or you buy stocks, and those are called equities, right? What they really want is money and investment for their crony capitalism. They want to have billions of dollars come in to build state-of-the-art, and as I put it, with their acronym, the Pharmaceutical Hospital Emergency Industrial Complex. And so as the Indonesian health minister, who's not a health minister, he's not a doctor, he's a banker. He's only been in that position for a year and a half. His life has been spent in banking. He presented this as a business opportunity. And that's what people really need to see this as. The international health regulations have nothing to do with health. They're not consulting doctors about the best way to treat people and cure them from whatever problem they have. It's all about surveillance. And the treaty is a business opportunity. They also have a funding mechanism, and they want tens of billions of dollars a year to prevent, an unknown that, quite frankly, if you really look at what happened, yes, it was bad. Many people took ill and a lot of horrible things happened. But, you also have to remember that flu completely disappeared. And so, the net result was people were harmed in many, many ways, mostly due to the response to the perceived problem, not actually the problem. There are doctors all around the world who treated tens of thousands of patients, and they never had to go to the hospital because they received proper treatment. And so the recommended treatments that came out of the WHO and the various national organizations caused more harm. And so what's not happening is they're not having a post-mortem. I hate to use that word, but unfortunately, many people died. They're not having a post-mortem about, well, wait a minute, the advice that you gave harmed people. And their belief, because they just, think that they have all of the right answers. They feel that the only thing that needs to change is that they should have legally binding authority to make their advice be mandatory and a whole heck of a lot more money to build out the pharmaceutical answers that didn't work and actually caused more harm. The insanity is astonishing, and maybe that's the reason why they're doing it all in secret.
It very well could be, and most likely is. Now, just going back to the international health regulations and the proposed changes there, do you think it is likely that given that review committee that Tedros pulled together was critical of a number of those changes, that the changes that reach the floor of the World Health Assembly will be different to the changes that we currently have out there in the public at the moment? I'm sorry, it's asking you to speculate a little bit. So I know that you don't want to speculate,
If I understand the question properly, I think I do.
Yes.
They have been a little bit vague about their specific answer. But what they were trying to do in the meetings that they had in February was reach a determination that they were done accepting new proposals for amendments and that they would move forward with what they had currently and then just negotiate from there. Okay. And so
right.
The negotiations are primarily secret. So, you know, in a negotiation, I imagine someone could come up with an idea that was not currently on the table and it could be accepted. But more to the point, what I'm actually really concerned about more than anything is that the parts of it that would implement the global digital health certificate, because the Indonesian health minister, he really set up the psychological operation that I think that they're likely to attempt. But if not this year, then next year. What he said was he laid out choices that were all false choices. He said before the B20 in Bali in November.
That's right.
Well, you know, back in 2020, we had to lock down the world. Well, no,
nonsense.
You didn't.
Yep.
You chose.
Yep.
Then he said that hurt the economy. It's like, well, you know, it hurt the mom and pop stores. It didn't hurt the big box stores, the Amazons and all that. And so then he said, well, you know, we want goods to move around. It's like, no, we want our personal freedoms so that we can move around. And then he laid out really the two biggest lies. He said, well, you know, if you're properly vaccinated or properly tested, then you'll be able to move around. And so what they're setting up is this false choice of, well, nobody wants the world to be locked down. You don't want to be injected or tested. And it's like, well, wait a minute. There's another option. How about you respect our rights and you leave us alone? Because those actions are not shown in any way, shape, or form to have had any benefit.
And so there's now actual direct admission, James, by Pfizer and its executives that their vaccine, so-called vaccine, I should say, doesn't actually stop transmission. So what would be the point of requiring people to have it before they go to another country when it's not going to stop transmission? Seems to be bizarre. But the whole thing's been bizarre. The whole thing has been bizarre. And it continues to be bizarre.
You're absolutely correct. But the point is, when people are confronted with, oh, let me give you a choice. You could do this lie, or that lie, okay? People don't realize and go, wait a minute, those are three lies. I don't want any of those. They generally choose the lesser of, you know, whatever the choices are. And so my concern is that the treaty and some of the most egregious aspects of the proposed amendments, there's a concept called the Overton window. You talk about things that are absurd and crazy, and then you negotiate that away, and then you come in with something that should be seen as crazy, but relative to some of the really outlandish proposals, you know, such as removing respect for dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms, they lay out something like a global digital health certificate, and it looks tame compared to the absolute ridiculousness of some of the other proposals. And so because everybody's talking about the treaty and they're talking about, you know, whether it has to be signed or go through parliamentary approval or the constitution or this, that, and the other thing, they're being distracted away from the amendments that can be quietly agreed upon with no presidential signature, no parliamentary or congressional approval, and these digital health certificates can be put in place, and as long as people don't make a big stink about it, there's no proactive signature needed. There's no vote in parliament. It's just they'll just keep it quiet, and before you know it, it will be put into force, and then they'll say, you know, well, when did that happen? And they'll go, well, you know, we told you all about it, but nobody said anything. And you're
so how can people? Yep, go on.
Well, step number one is, you know, get the link to this audio and raise everyone's awareness. Step number one.
Very good. You're answering my question that I didn't even ask. So that's very good. The question I was going to ask is how can people kick up a stink about it? Because this is so important. This is fundamental to the future of our democracy, the future of our medical freedom, our own freedoms, our sovereignty.
I've been reporting on this for about a year. Everything is on jamesroguski.substack.com, jamesroguski.substack.com. And I've put together a summary of 100 reasons why you should oppose this. And that is on stopthewho.com. And that's actually been translated into 18 different languages. You know, there's still many more languages, but that covers most of them. Stopthewho.com. Just spread those, you know, spread this video or audio rather, you know, recording, and share stopthewho.com with other people. And in Australia, I've worked with a group in Australia. You can go to AustraliaExitsTheWHO.com and reach out to your members of parliament and the Senate and let them know what you think.
Yeah, and I see that there is a form letter on that website that people can choose to send, or indeed contact details for some of the key politicians that people can contact, either national politicians, federal politicians, I should say, or their state politicians who may be in this sort of health regulation sphere.
I can almost guarantee that they will be completely confused between the difference of the treaty and the amendments, what's in both of them, and the dangerous manner in which the amendments could be adopted with no parliamentary or prime minister or foreign minister involvement whatsoever. 194 people get together in Geneva. They decide the fate of the world and your country and you and your life, and people have no idea that this is even, you know, potentially something that could happen.
And mate, we've only got a bit over a minute until we wrap up, but did I get it right that you said earlier that even if these international health regulation changes are passed by the Assembly come next year, that there is an 18-month period in which any national government can simply write to the WHO and say, we're out. Is that correct?
Currently, that is true. But the changes that they made last year, which are in the middle of that 18-month period, shortened the period to 10 months.
So how long have we got right now?
Well, the changes that were made last year, it's been about 10 months. And, you know, the whole point of it is, that is all of the evidence needed to prove that that is the method by which amendments are adopted.
Right. Very good. Well, you've been very informative, James. I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If you want to know more about James Roguski, go to jamesroguski.substack.com. Sorry for mispronouncing your name too, James. James, R-O-G-U-S-K-I. .substack.com. You're listening to George Christensen here on The George Christensen Show, part of TNT Radio.